This episode of the Art of Manliness podcast is brought to you by the 2016 GMC Sierra. Here at the Art of Manliness, we aim to live a fulfilling life, one that's full of refined experiences, exquisite craftsmanship, and unique moments, both big and small. It's an ethos that GMC shares, and it's why we appreciate the 2016 GMC Sierra. They set the standard for full-size pickup design by expertly blending precision and style into every detail. From the contrast stitching on the perforated leather-appointed seats to the stunning chrome of the signature Denali grille. Basically, it's you in truck form. For more information about the 2016 GMC Sierra, visit gmc.com or stop by your local GMC dealer for a test drive. Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. So last year, I went and switched over to a garage gym in my house, and it's been fantastic, but it's not without its problems. You know, for starters, there's the issue of space. How do you cram in a gym when you have to fit a car in your garage as well? Cutting down on costs so you don't spend a lot of money furnishing your garage. You know, like, which equipment do you need? And then the other part is just motivating yourself when you're working out by yourself. There's no other people around. It's dark outside. It might be 30 degrees outside. That happened during the wintertime. How do you motivate yourself to get out down there and work? My guest today, he has spent his career doing garage gym and helping people transition to a garage gym. His name is Jared Moon. He's written a lot of content for our site, how to make DIY fitness equipment like DIY Prowler. He's got a new book out though. It's called Garage Gym Athlete. And today on the podcast, we're going to talk about how to become a garage gym athlete, the pros and cons of garage gyms, the math of garage gym, the economics of garage gyms, why it might be more affordable than a regular gym, and how to motivate yourself when you're working out by yourself. Really interesting podcast. If you want to listen to the show notes with links to the resources we mentioned in the show, you can go to awim.is/moon. And as always, I appreciate if you would give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher if you enjoy the podcast. Jared Moon, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having me, man. Really glad to be here.
All right. So you've written some great content for us over the years about strength and fitness. The stuff that's been really popular is your DIY gym material, you know, how to make gym equipment for your garage just with some wood. You even have like used basketballs to make medicine balls. And you've written a lot of other great content over there, your site, End of Three Fitness. But you've got a new book coming out called Garage Gym Athlete. It's about starting a garage gym in your garage, obviously, and how to program when you're working out by yourself in your garage. I'm curious if you can tell us your story of how you started a garage gym and why you decided to go that route instead of going to a big giant Globo gym.
Yeah, man, I could definitely tell you the story how I got there, because it was kind of, I mean, it wasn't necessarily on purpose. I was in the Air Force in 2010, had just gone active duty, and at the same time, my wife and I were in a lot of debt. We were actually in $100,000 in debt, and we were really aggressively trying to pay that off. So we weren't just sitting in debt and doing nothing about it, which all of our extra money was going that direction. So it really limited how much money we had. And I was in pilot training at the time, and I'd been injured, and I was kind of on bed rest for a little bit because I had to have surgery from that injury. And so I'm just sitting around and super passionate about fitness. I mean, I always have been. It's not something I picked up when I started the garage gym. I started at a very young age in fitness, and I decided I wanted to make a garage gym because my introduction to the Air Force was much like anyone else joining the workforce, you know, extremely busy. You find out what real life is kind of going to be like, how much time you're not going to have. And so I decided I was going to start a garage gym to be a little bit more efficient and save money and just be able to work out at home and get it done. So that's kind of the quick backstory of it. I just did it pretty much out of necessity.
Right. You say we save money, because I think a lot of people hear that starting a garage, when they hear starting a garage, then there's a lot of startup cost to it. You have to buy a lot of equipment, the barbells, the plates, et cetera. Can you really save money on a garage gym compared to paying just $20 or $30 a month at a Globo gym?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on where you're going. If you are, you know, like a Planet Fitness that costs $10 a month or something, obviously, you could save a ton of money going somewhere like that. But it also depends on what kind of fitness that you're interested in. And I think that's where the big split and shift happens for me, because I'm more strength and conditioning, you know, is what I'll call it. kind of similar to CrossFit, but not really, kind of similar to strength training, powerlifting, but not really. So just strength and conditioning in general. And being able to do that stuff, like really out of Planet Fitness, they have the lunk alarm that shuts you down. They actually kick you out of the gym if you make any noise. And so you can save a ton of money if you look at it long-term. And something I actually break down in the book is there have been a lot of corporate wellness studies done in corporations where they look at their employees and they say, okay, for every dollar we spend on the well-being or health of our employees, we get X amount back. And you know, that being them being more productive, missing work less, and all sorts of stuff. But what they found was for every dollar they spend, they were finding that they'd get between $3 to $5 back, and some extreme outliers all the way up to $13 back for every dollar they spend. And so, you know, if you look at it that way, if you're not that consistent at actually going to the gym and you feel like having a home gym is going to make you more consistent, other than actually saving you money in the long term, because a gym membership is forever. You know, you kind of have the sunk cost after you spend it, and then that equipment you have in a garage gym is going to last forever. And so after that, it's all savings. It's savings on health insurance by being healthier. It's working out more, being more productive, missing less days of work, and all that stuff. So yeah, I think that a garage gym versus a commercial gym or Globo gym can definitely save you a lot of money, especially if you're more into the, I say the fancy ones, the Globo gyms that actually do charge you closer to like $200 a month. You're obviously going to save a ton of money by going garage gym route.
Right. I also feel like with Globo gyms, and for those of you who don't know what a Globo gym, it's sort of a derogatory term that people in the CrossFit powerlifting world use for big gyms with weight machines, saunas, and things like that, towel service. When you're going to a gym, you're often paying for services you don't even use, right? I mean, you might go there, but you never use the weight machine, or you just use the barbell and the squat rack. You don't use a towel service or their sauna, so you're just paying for stuff. Like, you might be paying $15 a month for stuff you don't even use. But with your garage gym, there's going to be a lot of upfront costs, but you're only going to have the equipment you actually use.
Right. It is a different way of looking at training. I mean, you really go, my recommendation for most people is going bare bones. And so we only, like, we really strip it down to just what you need. And then if you want to get crazier, as you realize that a garage gym is awesome, you know, like my garage gym started bare bones, and now I basically have my own like training facility built into my house. But, you know, where you go from after you start it is up to you.
All right. So what are the bare bones things that you would need to start a garage gym?
You know, I actually don't recommend a lot, just a barbell and some plates to get started. And, you know, I have a ton of DIY projects I've done, and the first one, if I had to go back, the very first one that I would do is squat and bench stands. So it's a super simple project. You just buy a couple of 4x4s, throw them in some of those big gallon buckets you can get at Home Depot. I think they might be like 5-gallon buckets, and then pour cement around them. And then you have uprights to set the bar on. Obviously, that there's a little more detail to actually how to do that project. But that would be the first project. So now you have barbell, you have weights, and you have somewhere that you can squat off of and bench off of. So you obviously need a bench if you're going to do bench press, but you can do strict press and all sorts of stuff. And I mean, that squat the stands project is going to cost you $30. And then the barbell and plates, depending on where you get it, I mean, it could cost anywhere from $300 to $1,000. Really depends on the quality of your equipment. But grand scheme of things, not too expensive, but that'd be my recommendation for starting out. Very, very simple stuff right there.
Where do you suggest people go to get the best equipment? I mean, should they buy new? Where can they go if they want to buy used? I mean, one of the things you advocate is if you're going to go used, buy stuff on Craigslist.
Yeah, so one of my favorite things, and it's still working right now, is actually how I've bought a few items, is have you heard of IFTT, the IFTTT?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's If This Then That, and you can go to the website to check them out. And it basically they have what are called recipes, and it's triggers. So if something happens, then it'll do something for you. And they have all sorts of cool stuff that they do. But one of the things that you can do is you can set up a search in Craigslist. And the search in Craigslist could be, say, for a barbell, and then you can also select the price range and your location. So everything, your criteria. And then if that ever pops up in Craigslist, you'll get an email. You can set it to where IFT will send you an email, and then you right there you have you'll get the first dibs, the first shot at it, because a lot of people aren't doing this. And I originally saw this, but not for a garage gym use. And so I was like, I'm gonna try it before I write about it on my website. And I did it for an Airdyne at the price I wanted. And within, I think it's just a few days, I set it up. Airdyne showed up at the price I wanted, contacted the guy. He's like, man, I got a ton of people contacting me, but you were the first, so I'm going to give it to you. And I got it. So I think Craigslist and setting that on autopilot is probably the best way. Just leave that stuff running, because you might even want more stuff later. So I have stuff that I've set up that I just keep going, because I could always use more plates or another barbell if someone, you know, abandons the garage gym scene or whatever.
So yeah, one thing I've noticed too, it's just putting the word out, just like telling people I'm looking for certain pieces of equipment, and somehow magically word gets out and stuff just starts showing up. It's kind of funny.
There are a ton of people who maybe thought the garage gym was a good idea, you know, and they decided not to continue. Maybe they did miss some of the amenities or whatever. And so they will sell their equipment for very cheap because it just becomes cumbersome to have all that stuff and move it around if you're moving and all that other stuff. So yeah, it's good to just put the word out and ask around.
What do you do about space? I mean, if you only have a one car garage and your wife wants to park her car in the garage, how do you accommodate for that when you have limited space for a garage gym?
Yeah, man, limited space. This is a common one, and that some of the struggles they're pretty common struggles with garage gym athletes. I've actually done surveys with thousands of people at Endo3 Fitness, and space is one of the biggest things that people are like, what do I do without space? But, you know, over the years, I've seen some really creative stuff. There's actually a girl here in Dallas who emailed me a picture, and they had moved from, I think, somewhere in the Midwest, and they moved here to Dallas, and they got an apartment. But they're on the bottom floor, and it was like straight concrete floors and stuff. And some of the coolest stuff that she did, she actually made part of her garage gym equipment into like the decoration of her house. Like it would be a stack of bumper plates with a lamp in the middle. And her husband would like remove this stuff and, you know, work out at night and then put it all back together. But her apartment looked amazing to me. Maybe I'm a little biased, but that was really cool. That's obviously like an extreme situation, trying to turn your garage gym into the decor of your house so you can just work out at any time. But I also know guys in California who are killing it in really small one-car garages. But really, just go outside. I mean, unless you live in just an extremely cold climate, and I'm talking about the guys who are getting below zero, anything else with, I think you should be able to put up with some extra layers of clothes. But go outside. Like I said, this isn't a ton of equipment. If you have a truck or a car, I mean, before I had a truck, I was lugging around all my stuff in my wife's Honda Accord. You know, barbell will actually fit through the trunk and all the way up through the console if you really want to, and you could take it just about anywhere and train anywhere.
Yeah, take it to the park or something.
Yeah.
Also, you just said that a person put their gym inside their apartment. So this doesn't necessarily mean a garage gym has to be in your garage, right? It could be in your home or anywhere else in your apartment.
No, yeah, I like to think of the garage gym athlete, if you will, more as a mentality as opposed to just having a garage. Because, I mean, if you have an extra room in your house, if you have a concrete slab outside, if you have a basement, obviously a garage, you know, a park near your house, any of that stuff, I kind of consider you a garage gym athlete because it's more the mentality of, look, I don't have a ton of stuff, but I'm going to get the work done no matter what.
So if you're going to have a gym inside, whether your garage or inside your home, and you're going to be doing barbells and plates, are there considerations that you should take into account in order to avoid undue wear and tear on your space?
On the space itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, smashing concrete. The equipment's one thing, but the space itself, I highly recommend. I didn't say this, and that's me lifting a garage for many, many years before I started giving this recommendation officially. I just always deadlifted on concrete or whatever, and to save my equipment, I didn't, you know, but I ended up straining my neck on some heavy high rep deadlifts, and it's just from pounding into the concrete. So I do recommend getting some rubber flooring. The best place to do that is going to be Tractor Supply Company. They have like horse stall mats. It'll be the cheapest, best bang for your buck, because you can just get one, I think it comes in like a 6x5 four or something like that with that, which is almost fits a barbell. It'll fit where the plates sit on a barbell at least, and that's all you need, and you can go up from there. They're not too expensive.
So I started a garage gym, and it took me a while to finally pull the trigger on it. And I was thinking about it for almost a year because I was just worried that I was going to buy this stuff and I wasn't going to use it, or I wasn't going to like the garage gym. So how do you avoid buyer's remorse? I mean, how do you avoid being the guy who buys the garage gym and he doesn't like it and he has to sell it on Craigslist for much less than what he paid for it?
You know, that's really a mentality question, and it is something I approach in the book. That's the whole first part of the book, because I know that that's a real possibility that people are going to, I don't know, maybe you see something, maybe hear this podcast or you see something on YouTube or whatever, and you get fired up for a garage gym and you want to do it, you know, and then yeah, a few months later, you're like, yeah, well, that wasn't working out. And, you know, just personally for me, when, you know, I'll tell this story and maybe it'll help people relate to, you know, what they can do in their lives. But when I started, I told you, my wife and I were in a ton of debt. Since then, we've gotten out of debt completely. But we were in a ton of debt, putting all of our money towards that. We did not have a lot of money. And I was going to buy that, the first big purchase, I like to call it, which is going to be your barbells and plates. And that was a big decision for me and my wife at that time. So I had to, I was like, hey, you know, are you cool with me buying this stuff? She was. I have a great wife, and you know, she supports me. And so we did. She knows how passionate I am about fitness. But that whole, you know, making this huge decision to spend that money, I kind of had a mindset shift for me, because I realized I wasn't working out or continuing to do what I was doing just because I wanted to lift in my garage. It was something much deeper than that. It was the fact that I did not want my wife to think that I was the type of guy, because we were newly married at this point. And so I didn't want her to think that I was the type of guy who's going to waste our family's money. You know, the guy who doesn't stick to things that he starts. I didn't want my wife to think any of that. So really, I got a very big why from the get-go. And that why was, what kind of man does my wife think that I am? And, you know, having a huge why, this is something I realized after the fact. It's not something I went in like, oh yeah, I got to, you know, do this and that. It's just kind of analyzing myself after the fact. And so if you can tie anything that you're doing to a huge, huge why, you know, like, you know, I'm doing this, I'm working out in my garage because I want to be healthy for my kids, or I want to be able to play with my kids I'm older. And I say kids because I have two kids, but you know, whatever your why is, I know a lot of people want to look good with a shirt off and all that stuff. And I totally get that, but it's proven over and over again that those extrinsic motivators aren't going to last when it comes to your motivation. You need something intrinsic to you that's going to make you stick, you know, for a long time. I think if you answer that question first, you'll never be the guy who's selling your weights for pennies on the dollars on Craigslist.
So obviously you're the big advocate of the garage gym. You're the garage gym guy. But what do you think are the downsides of it? I mean, if someone's making this decision or weighing the pros and cons, what are some of the things they might miss if they don't go to a big gym anymore?
You know, the two biggest things that are going to be a huge problem for most people, the first one's going to be weather. Because I know a lot of guys out there, they live in like Michigan or Minnesota. They're still getting it done, by the way, but that takes a little different mental toughness than most people are willing to fork over, if you will. Because, I mean, that's freezing cold weather, or maybe it's the extreme heat. I've had that. I lived in Wichita Falls, and it's 115 degrees. But you really just have to adapt to that situation, and if you can't, then maybe it's not a good situation for you. But that's the first one, you know, the elements. The second biggest one, and I don't know if you get this as much in a global gym, but it's going to be accountability. If you do have some sort of workout partner that you meet at the gym, or if you go to a CrossFit box, which is just a CrossFit affiliate gym, then, you know, there are people there holding you accountable, people you can work out with. So the accountability piece, if you have that and you start working out alone in your gym, that's a huge factor as well. So I'd say those two are the biggest.
I guess with the first one, you can do something, right? If it's hot, add a fan to your garage.
Yeah, if it's cold, you know, get sweats.
Space heater maybe.
Yeah, I've done all of that. So like I work out in the mornings. And granted, it doesn't get super cold here in Dallas, Texas. But I do, if it's going to be cold, we do have some winters where, you know, it'll drop below freezing and everything. I'll just turn on a space heater while I warm up and everything. And the garage will warm up a little bit by the time I'm ready to go. So
right. So on to the second factor, the motivation, because that's what I found is one of the hardest shifts to make when I went to my garage gym, was that going to the gym, it put you in a mindset. I had to get on my gym stuff, my gym clothes. I got in the car and it was like, this is gym time. It's weird. Whenever you're, you know, have a garage gym, I just have to go down to the garage and I start working out. And to be honest, at first it was hard to make that shift that I can just work out anytime I want. And that's what's weird. It was sort of counterintuitive, is that because it was so easily accessible, there's this tendency to be like, well, I can do that sometime later. So I'd had to schedule for it. And I don't feel like I had to schedule it for, I didn't feel like I had to schedule for it, but I've learned that I had to just treat like I was going to the gym 5 minutes away from my house. You get into the book about some mindset things you can do to get yourself into that gym mindset, even when your gym is in your house and you're training by yourself. Can you share some of those tips on developing that pro mindset you call in your book?
Yeah, because that's a big thing, man. And I completely agree with you. When I first started the garage gym, it is kind of difficult to make that transition. You know, it's almost like Pavlov's dogs, you know, with the conditioning. You know, it's you have to train your mind that when you step over the threshold, that doorway into your garage gym, that is a different place. You're no longer, you know, you are working out. You're not, like, for instance, I work at home, so my computer is literally 15 feet. Like, if I were to just walk through the door to come back, there's no checking email. All that stuff is gone, and you need to treat it as such once you're in the garage gym. But some of the stuff that I get into about, you know, training like a pro, is there's a lot of – one thing is as big as commitment and consistency. And, you know, it's a huge psychological principle that's been researched, and – if you commit something to other people, that is one way that's going to help you stick to your goals. And this isn't necessarily the pro mindset, but it's just a tip that people can do that I recommend is, if you were to like get some business cards, blank business cards, like the templates from Walmart or whatever, write down your goal as a statement. Say, you know, I will run a mile this fast. I will lose this much weight. I will lift this much weight, and give it to like 10, 15, 20 of your closest friends, letting them know what you have like dedicated yourself towards, and obviously put it in a time frame. I will squat 500 pounds in the next year or whatever, and then give that to them and let them kind of, now that they know about it, it just will hold you accountable. But a lot of other things, if you are training alone on a consistent basis, and I've been doing it for years, thousands of sessions in the garage gym alone, completely alone, I've gotten a few things that I've done over the years that have really helped me, and putting yourself in what I like to call like a no quit situation. And one of the workouts we commonly do at Into 3 Fitness is called the Iron Mile. And this one's more of a mental toughness thing than it is like strength training or whatever. But say you put weight on your back, say it's 185 pounds, and I want you to walk 800 meters away from your garage, so a half mile, and then you have to come back. And so the first half mile won't be as bad, but you're putting yourself in a no-quit situation, because if you have a barbell on your back and you walk a half mile away, your only option is to come back. Or, you know, where if you're, you know, you just can't handle it, I guess you could call your spouse or whatever to come pick you up. But putting yourself in no-quit situations like that is a huge one. And then another one I have is putting your money where your fitness is. And this is similar to telling your friends your goals, but I have had a mentor who did this. I thought it was really cool. Is write a check. It could be to your friend or to a charity or whatever. And say, if I don't achieve that goal that I've told you about, I want you to send this money away and to that charity, or I want you to keep it. And because money is a huge motivator for a lot of people. And I would make it an amount of money that's going to hurt for your personal financial situation just a little bit, whether that's $100 or $1,000 or whatever. Say your best friend's going to keep $1,000 if you don't achieve your goal. That'll motivate a lot of people. And then also, I just challenge people to have a mental toughness habit that they perform each and every single day. For me, that's cold showers every single morning. Whatever it is for you, something that you don't enjoy doing that you're going to do every day, that's just going to cause you to push yourself a little bit more. But, you know, there's a lot more that I get into about all of that stuff. Training like a pro, I mean, you need to benchmark yourself regularly, stick to a program for at least 12 weeks. I mean, these are just kind of some of the highlights, you know, and holding yourself accountable. and how much you're lifting, and you know how fast you're running, like actually pacing that stuff out. Like if you're gonna go for a mile run, don't just jog it out. Like you need to know your paces, you need to know your splits, and then try to get faster each time. Be knowledgeable about your training. Don't just be off the cuff training. That's not gonna help anyone. All honesty, you're not gonna progress very much, and you probably will quit the gym scene because you don't know what you're doing. So you just really need to benchmark yourself and keep up with getting better.
Yeah, don't exercise, train.
Exactly.
Yeah, most people exercise when they go to gym. They go there, I'm going to do some curls maybe some shoulder presses.
Oh man, that just confuses me. Like I don't even know. I would probably just rather skip the workout if I told I had to do right. Just like that.
Just do that. So have a plan, have a program.
Yeah, for sure.
This is great. Some great ideas about motivating yourself when you're training alone. The whole paying someone, I've done that before. Not for fitness, but for writing. There's a website out there called Stick. That's spelled STICKK. And that's what you do. You make a bet. You put money on the line. And if you don't completely finish it, then your money can go to your friend, but it can also go to a charity, or you could do what they call an anti-charity. It's a charity or organization that you don't believe in. So if you're a Republican, you can have it go to the Democratic Party. If you're a Democrat, have it go to the Republican Party. The idea, your money is going to go to some group that you completely disagree with. That could be a huge motivating factor.
Right. I think if you, that's what I call step one kind of the big purchase, because there's really no way around it. I'm not going to suggest that anyone, and I've looked into this stuff. I've looked into every single DIY option out there, but as far as making casts for your own plates and pouring cement and building your own barbell, I don't recommend any of that stuff. It's all going to break. It's not going to last. So you kind of have to, if you're going to do this, the things that you have to buy and you have to buy quality are going to be the barbell and the plate. The plates are not as important on the quality as the barbell, but you're going to have to spend the money. And so that will at least hopefully get you motivated and stuck in it for enough time to make it a habit.
Right. So if you're looking for other places to buy equipment or just like the barbell and plates, I know Rogue is the big company out there that they're supplying CrossFit gyms as well as garage gyms. But one of the things I found with them is they can be pretty pricey. So one company that I like, and this is what I've used to outfit my garage gym, is Fringe Sport, based in Austin, Texas. They've got some great stuff at affordable prices. So if any of you are interested in looking into that, go check them out. They've got some great equipment down there.
Yeah, man, I second that notion. Both of those, and completely agree. Rogue is great, really high quality stuff, can be pricey. And then Fringe, I know Peter Keller as well down in Austin with Fringe Sport. Awesome company, awesome equipment as well. Great places to buy from.
Right. So as far as the plates go, do you recommend iron bumper plates or a mixture of the two?
Official recommendation, if you want to save money, is going to be a mixture of the two, because the bumper plates, it really depends on your fitness, but the bumper plates are going to, dampen the noise. And if you're doing Olympic lifting, you can drop them and whatever. But if you don't drop weights, like you're a power lifter, and you're doing squats and bench press, I mean, the deadlift you might drop, but you can get all iron. But how I would actually do it is buy a small set, the smallest set of bumper plates. I think you can get like a 160-pound pack, for pretty cheap. And then I actually say go to Dick's Sporting Goods, not for their barbell, but you're going to get a barbell in the process. This is the best deal, and they always have it. It's $300 for 300 pounds of plates, which comes out to about $1 a pound. And I think that's not including the barbell. And so you really get like 345 pounds of stuff for less than $1 a pound, which the industry average, I think, is closer to $1.50, if not $2 a pound, depending on where you're buying from. So I'd get that. That's what I did. Get the iron plates. And then I have the bumper plates as well. So I have about, 600 or 700 pounds worth of plates in my garage, but you never want to be stronger than the amount of plates you have. That's one of my rules. So, buy them however you have to.
Right. Speaking of another downside, you mentioned the bumper plates reducing the sound. Another downside you might want to take into consideration, and I found this at the very beginning of my garage gym, I have a weird house where my garage is underneath my house, and it's right underneath my 2-year-old daughter's bedroom. So I work out at 5:30 in the morning, and when I first started doing the garage gym, I was doing deadlifts. I had bumper plates. I don't drop the weight, but I lower it in a controlled fashion, sort of dropping it in a controlled fashion. It makes a lot of racket. In the first few weeks, like, I was waking her up.
Yeah.
I had to quiet her down.
that's something I don't think about as much now. I do have young kids. I have a almost 4-year-old and almost 2-year-old. But in our new house that we moved into last year, my garage is almost like behind my house, and then I have this huge cement slab in the backyard. So I'm almost on my own now. But I was in the military and moved around quite a bit when I was having my first garage gym, and had the exact same problem. I lived in a really small house in Florida. My son, you know, a newborn, I couldn't get far enough away. You know,
right.
I was like, I tried to work out like almost on the sidewalk and street. If I was doing heavy deadlift, my wife would still be like, "You can still hear, I can still hear you." And you know, William is waking up because he was a really bad sleeper early on. And so definitely a huge consideration. And there's not a ton that you can do. You could try getting a lot of rubber and bumpers, but it's still going to be.
Right. My daughter's the same way. She's a terrible sleeper. So you're always walking on eggshells around her at the very beginning of the first few years of her life. She's gotten better, and she's used to the garage gym, so she doesn't wake up. So that's great. Let's talk a little bit more about your program, because you talked that your approach to programming is not really CrossFit, but it's a combination of strength and conditioning. Can you walk us through a little bit of the programming you do and recommend at End of Three Fitness and your garage gym athletes?
Yeah, so there's two things about my programming. And the reason I say it differs a little bit than CrossFit, there's still metabolic conditioning, which are that's kind of the typical CrossFit workout you see, you know, where you're doing a ton of pull-ups and a ton of thrusters or whatever. We do stuff like that, but I want to toe the line more of balancing as much strength with as much fitness as possible. And so that's, you know, I put myself as the human guinea pig in everything I do and program. And, you know, I've been able to get the triple body weight deadlift, which was 540 pounds for me at the time, and still maintain a sub 6-minute mile. So that's kind of the fitness that I'm looking at. And the aesthetics, as far as how you look, if you achieve things like that, you're going to look how you want to. I can almost guarantee it. You're not going to have a pot belly and run a sub 6-minute mile. That's just not going to happen. But you can have a pot belly and lift 800 pounds. That's actually way more common. And so, yeah, I really like to toe the line of, you know, strength and conditioning. So how much can you balance it? But at the same time, I like to keep it realistic for the garage gym athlete. The garage gym athlete is not the Rich Fronings of the world. If you don't know who Rich Froning is, he's the guy who won the CrossFit Games multiple times. He trains like 6 or 7 times a day. So I try to break down the training to realistic blocks for people to do. And so that's the big thing about the programming inside Garage Gym Athlete is what I've coined as block programming. And so block programming is each block is 10 minutes and there's 5 blocks inside of that window. And so it's going to equal an hour. I know the math comes out to 50 minutes, but if you add in transition and getting lazy here and lazy there, it'll be 60 minutes every time. So every athlete that I train knows for a fact they'll never be training more than an hour. It's like physically impossible, because if you don't complete something, you have to stop and move on to the next thing. And so within those 5 areas, we work strength and prehab stuff. So you'll always be doing some sort of strength work in the first part of your first 10-minute block. And sometimes that can be 2 blocks. That's going to get you stronger. But it's also some accessory work to prevent you from getting injured. So, you know, whatever accessory work that could be for your shoulders, your back, or whatever, just to avoid injury. And then, you know, we also are going to work on what we call the daily, which are abdominal stuff, lower back stuff, all the little muscles, the hamstrings, to make sure that you're ready to go. And then we have metabolic conditioning, which I kind of mentioned. And then we have Z stability, which is basically the Zercher lifts. And if you're not familiar with the Zercher lift, it is holding it in the crook of your arms. So if your arms are bent, you're holding it in between your elbows and lifting it there. And then also general fitness. And I know I just covered a lot. So we have 5 areas, and those 5 blocks you're going to hit all throughout the entire week. And it's just really well-rounded, because you're getting in accessory work, you're getting in strength work, you're getting in some general fitness stuff, which could be like just running or rowing. And then you're also getting in the high intensity metabolic conditioning stuff a few times a week.
What kind of metabolic training sessions are you guys doing?
It really varies. So what breaks it up differently than typical CrossFit training, because that metabolic conditioning is the closest that we get. Sometimes we'll just do really intense intervals. So some of my favorites are 6 rounds of 30 seconds on, followed by 30 seconds off in running or rowing. But you have to have a meter goal for those 30 seconds. And that keeps people really honest. And it gets really hard really fast. But then also doing stuff like, so say you sprint for a full minute, and then you would, you know, lift weight squat, do 10 back squats at 50% of your one rep max, and then rest for a minute. So the rest is kind of built in. I say that's where we kind of differ, is because if you're doing 3 rounds of something and I tell you just go as hard as you can for until you're done, I like that to a point, but I don't think it's realistic for everyone all the time. Maybe we do that once a week or once every other week. I like to tell you, okay, this is 3 rounds. You're going to go as hard as you can in 2 different exercises for 2 minutes. You're going to rest for 2 minutes, and then we're going to do that 3 times. And so when you know the rest is built in there, you're going to go so much harder at the beginning part of that metabolic conditioning that you're going to get more benefit than if you were to do the first 2 rounds, burn out, and then just kind of do a half effort the rest of the way.
So here's another question that came to my mind. Let's say you don't want to train by yourself and you've got a bud who's like, yeah, I want to come do the same program as you. Are there considerations you take into account whenever you start inviting people into your garage gym? I'm talking like legal or insurance implications.
You know, obviously there's going to be something there. I mean, do you need a neighbor waiver? Maybe. It depends on how serious you're getting. But hopefully if they're your buddies and they hurt themselves, that's kind of...
They're not going to sue you for it.
Yeah, I would hope, but I do. And it all depends on how you're doing, because I'm a coach. I've coached a lot of athletes. So if someone does come to train at my house, then and I know their fitness level, I'll ask them a ton of questions and everything, I'm going to instruct them first. But if you are just, you know, having a bro sesh, you know, and you invite someone over and you guys are just going to work out and the guy hurts himself because there's no instruction there or whatever, then yeah, that can get a little dicey. I would, just to be safe, if it, like, I know that there are different homeowners insurance out there that covers like a certain amount, right, for that kind of stuff. But if you want to put together some sort of, I'm obviously not a lawyer, but if you want to put together some waiver, that would be great just to kind of cover your own butt. Right.
Or maybe get umbrella insurance.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Hey, Jared, where can people learn more about your work?
Yeah. So you can go to endof3fitness.com. That's all spelled out. Endof3fitness.com.
What does that mean, by the way?
So it came up with it a long time ago. I actually thought it'd be a cool name for a band. You know how the drummer's like one, two, three, and then they go.
Yeah.
And so when I decided I was going to start a fitness website, I had told my wife about that a long time ago. And she's like, that's a perfect name for it. Cause that's kind of where that's where the fitness happens, at the end of three, you know, at the end of that countdown. And so that's what Endof3 Fitness means.
Okay. Yeah. I was curious about that.
And then I'd say garagegymathlete.com as well. It's not a different website. It's just with the book coming out, you could just type that in, maybe easier to remember, but garagegymathlete.com will take you to the book because we're giving away free copies when we first launch it. So,
all right, Jared Moon, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man. Super glad to be on. Thank you so much.
My guest today was Jared Moon. He's the author of the book Garage Gym Athlete. And you can find more information about his book at garagegymathlete.com. You can find it on Amazon. And also check out his other site, endof3fitness.com, for more DIY fitness equipment tips and plans. And also make sure to check out the show notes for this show at aom.is/moon. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy this show and have got something out of it, I'd really appreciate it if you give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, as that helps spread the word about the show. And also just tell your friends about us. As always, appreciate your continued support. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.